came to realize that what started out as a natural disaster became a man-made disaster.
We cannot control the natural disaster, but what we can do is control our response.
Have you ever wondered whether disasters are actually natural? If so, you're in the right place.
Hello and welcome. My name is Jason von Medding.
And I am Ksenia Chmutina.
This is Disasters Deconstructed, a podcast where we examine why disasters really happen.
Thank you for tuning in.
Part of it is to do with flooding and the impacts of flooding.
It is. Yeah.
Do you swear?
Usually when I'm doing DIY. Yeah.
Excuse me, but it's effing horrible.
Yeah.
Effing horrible.
Yeah.
Effing horrible.
Yeah.
And then as we come back, I'll show you.
Yeah.
A snippet of where we're hoping to guide the water.
Oh, right, okay.
Next time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you've got to be logical, it's going to come again.
Yeah.
They're on like a breeze block bed.
Yeah, I can see, yeah.
Because potentially that's done on a statistic of 30 years.
Yeah.
Flooding. So if the water comes over from here,
yeah,
the caravans shouldn't, under the data structure that they've done, get any water.
Right.
Way to describe it. That's the only way to describe it. That's the only way to describe it. I won't leave my property now. We just lived upstairs. I think it depends on you yourself, how strong you are and what sort of a person you are. But then you still didn't have a toilet, you didn't have a kitchen.
What was it, £20 a day?
Yeah.
In 2007, they knocked everything down.
Oh, yeah.
Everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not the ceiling,
yeah,
but everything.
I said, but you're young enough to move again if you want to move. It's up to you, you know what I mean? Yeah. But no, I won't leave it now. When I leave here, it'll be on my way, and I'm not coming back. Put it that way.
I'm Dave Angel, and I'm a doctoral researcher at Loughborough University in the UK. My PhD is called Reconstruct Home, and I'm looking at ways in which people reconnect to their home after being flooded in the UK. I've got three supervisors, Professor Ksenia Chmutina, who you may know, Professor Vicky Haynes and Dr. Monia Del Pinto, all from Loughborough University. I'm now in the third year of this project, trying to pull it all together. It's gone through a few changes along the way. You might be wondering why you've heard some strange sounds already. That's because, amongst other things, I'm a musician and a composer. I'm trying to use music and sound and audio as the basis of data representation to try to get a bit closer to how people are feeling, what they experience, and how they express it. The output of the research will be written but accompanied by quite a bit of audio, and I'll be talking about the compositional approach as we go through, along with some of the lessons that I've learned. The fieldwork and the interviews were all carried out in Doncaster in the UK, in a small part of town called Bentley Town End. It's an ex-industrial area quite close to the city centre, and also right next to the River Don, which features quite heavily in my research. And that's what the river sounds like at the nearby lock. Like many former industrial areas, Doncaster and Bentley suffer from a kind of urban trauma, like many of the other ex-mining areas. Also, Bentley has a renowned history of flooding, the most recent events being in 2007 and again in 2019. Lucy Easthope, in her fantastic books, The Recovery Myth and When the Dust Settles, talks quite a bit about Doncaster and the way people cope with the flooding. But I don't want to paint a negative picture about this area. Not at all. It's got a lot of good points, and I spent most of my life there, hence this study. There's a lot of positivity in the area, despite the hardships that people have. And there's a lot of community spirit, and people take pride in their homes. There's a council-led programme of health improvement for the locals, and there are now much better flood defences, about which the locals have mixed feelings. The place names around the area are quite revealing too. Fish Lake, Bentley Ings, and Marshgate, all giving the impression of low-lying areas. Despite the frequency and history of flooding, many new builds in Britain are in areas that have the potential to be flooded.
Obviously, everything had to go because it's contaminated water. Yeah. So everything has to be cleared out and, you know...
I'll tell you a bit about these three podcast episodes. The first one is about the background to the research and the research sites, and features some raw interview footage, along with a few musical ideas and audio snippets. The second one will feature the stories of some of the people who've helped me, and there'll also be a discussion about the representation of research findings through creative means. So the research features a lot of sound, music, spoken word, and ambient sound. The final episode will feature a longer soundscape to give an idea of the output of the research. Also, it'll feature the voices of participants saying what they think to it. Does it work and does it express their experiences? The word participatory is used a lot in social research. It's a great idea and it encourages research to be based around people and their experiences. But how easy is this in practice? I'll try to give a frank view of some of the lessons that I've learned about carrying out this kind of research, some of the ups and downs in the process, and any potential ways over these hurdles.
But I've said since day one, if he'd have told me that I was moving into an area that is a flood risk, I would have never moved in.
Yeah.
So, in a way, I'm quite angry with it.
I think in the overall context of disaster research, this could really be termed a local study. First, I felt it was ethical and good for the environment, not to be travelling great distances. Second, there's a detectable trend in disaster research and in wider disciplines of keeping it local, rather than descending on a community whom you hardly really know. So, I was keen to carry out my work in an area where I might start with some local knowledge. What are the advantages of doing a local study? And is this really a local study? I'd say so, pretty much. Although I didn't live in Bentley, I'd lived right next to it for years, decades in fact, on both sides of the river. Fortunately, I was in an area that didn't flood, but it was a stone's throw across the river to those areas that did flood. A few inches can make all the difference.
Insurance company didn't insure us again after this last one, and we'd been waiting for years.
So what's this project about? Well, it's part of a bigger research group called the Centre for Doctoral Training at Loughborough University. Seven doctoral researchers are using innovative methods to look into aspects of home and homelessness. I'm looking at the concept of home and its myriad parts. How do people perceive home, and how does it change after your house has been flooded? Many things have been ruined and your life has been turned upside down. And then you've got contractors and tradesmen in and out of the house for months on end, along with all the wrangling with insurance companies. An experience that was made even worse by the 2020 COVID pandemic, which happened right in the middle of many people's reparations. I've been fortunate enough to work with some fantastic people who've been incredibly helpful beyond the call of duty. These are the Well Doncaster Council Organisation, who promote well-being around the town, Reread, a book recycling charity, literally on the banks of the River Don that flooded at the same time as Bentley. There's also Refurnish, another fantastic local charity, several of whose staff had their homes flooded. This was an organisation that helped provide people with replacement furniture and household goods immediately after the flooding. I also was lucky enough to work with Jane Nightingale, a local councillor, who played and still plays an incredibly active role in the post-flood areas. Jane's a selfless character who gives so much of herself to the people, it's really quite amazing. I was fortunate that she gave me so much of her valuable time. Before we delve into the more detailed compositions and analyses, here's an excerpt from a conversation I had with Jane. If you ever thought the role of a councillor was an easy one, just listen to this. All in a day's work for her, obviously.
Well, the run up to it, you could see, you know, the ground was very wet, etc. And a lady contacted me to say the road was flooded. They just couldn't get down. So I said, right, so I went down there and I was surprised at the amount of water down there. I was absolutely soaked because we were having these heavy downpours. Got changed into dry clothes and everything. I got off there, went home. All that week, running up to that Thursday, I kept saying to my colleagues, there's something wrong with the dike. And they kept saying, why? And I said, well, because it's rising. And I've never seen it that high. And they went, oh, it's probably just the heavy rain that we're having, because we'd had a week of it. Well, when we got the call from Pam, who lives at Tolbar, to say Tolbar's flooding, and the council were there starting to close the road off. The road was flooding. It was mainly the houses on the main road and a few on the back areas. The water was coming up. So that was it. Yeah. So we were dealing with that, and we were dealing with obviously called for help with sandbags and things like that, because residents were getting really worried after the 2007 experience. So we were up there dealing with that. I was there while about 2 o'clock in the morning the next day, and as I came home, the roads were closed off coming into Bentley because of the volume of water on them. So I had to divert, and coming down York Road, it was like a river. And I thought, there's something. So I went home, got some dry clothes on, and it was coming up towards the house. It was quite deep then. And you sort of like start thinking, what's going off? Because there's nothing what you could actually put your finger on, if you understand what I mean. From that, I went home, got changed again, because it was absolutely pouring with rain. So I went back to Bowen Close, was helping these elderly residents, because obviously it was coming very close to their doors. When I got a call and said, the Don's breached its bank. Obviously, Willow Bridge, we couldn't access everything, the caravan site. The police said, you know, safety, you can't go down there. And I'm like, well, we need to go down there because we need to see to our residents. And they're like, no, you're not going down there. And I'm like, yeah. And you've got all residents then, you know, screaming and shouting at you. You knew this was coming. Blah, 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 blah. And they do, and they get...
I've already mentioned that I'm a musician. I'm actually a guitarist. Principally nowadays, though, I see myself as a composer, and I'm interested in ambient sound, melody, atmosphere, and effect. When I started this research, I couldn't quite see how to make a connection, how to use creative interests in a constructive way within the research. Eventually, I had a bit of a eureka moment and decided to explore how to represent my findings and my data analysis in an art-based form that contained music, but also two other elements, ambient sound and voice. Sort of a soundscape, although soundscape often implies ambient sound. In fact, when you think about it, these three elements are probably what you'd expect to find in the soundtrack to a film. So in a sense, it's filmic, but minus the visuals, maybe a bit more like radio. The listener has to use their imagination and build up a mental image of what they're hearing and fill in the gaps. An important part of the process. The thematic analysis from the transcripts was guided by a set of themes about home, what makes up a home. These are things like privacy, possessions, control. At the same time, I'd been composing bits of music, not really as part of the research, more as a means of relaxing in between the mental exercises. That meant playing the guitar and making up tunes. I had the idea of linking the data analysis and synthesis together with audio to form a representation like an audio canvas. But what can I say beyond words? The written word is a tried and tested method in academia. But could I create something more engaging, maybe with wider appeal or wider listenership? But that's enough talking for now. Here's a short piece that I've been working on over the last few months. It's got quite a simple theme, drawn out from quite a few interviews, but expressed so succinctly by one participant, Sarah. She was living in a rented property, and I think that marks a distinct difference across all of the interviews that I did. The tenant usually has less control than the homeowner, and this increases the sense of frustration when coping with a flood. Here's something to think about whilst you're listening to this. I've placed this composition into some kind of context in terms of what the research is about and who it's about. But there are still lots of unknowns. What is she going to talk about? What jumps out in terms of the music and the spoken word? Do they fit together? Does one enhance the other?
I used to like listening to rain. I think the scariest bit out of all of it, hands down, was laid in bed at night and on the Venetian blinds you could watch the waves go past. A little bit of myself, not belongings, but me. It's out of my control. It's out of my control. A couple of days when you in that situation, it feels like a couple of weeks because it just seems so surreal. It's out of my control. But the stress is so overwhelming. Bit out of all of it, hands down, was laid in bed at night and on the Venetian blinds you could watch the waves go past. It's out of my control.
Now, I'm not claiming that's a musical masterpiece. I think I have fairly high musical standards, but it's not really about that. Somehow, I think the music seemed to capture the emotion or the sentiment or the meaning, if we dare say that, of what Sarah was saying. And I just wanted to create sort of a simple piece, almost in sort of verse chorus or strophic form, really through repetition, and giving space to the lyrics, or the words, whatever you want to call them. So some of the phrases are repeated, really like you'd get in a pop song. In the next podcast, I'll be talking to some of my colleagues about artistic representation, on top of playing some more ideas, and explaining the techniques that went into recording them, putting them together, and then linking them to the themes that came out of the analysis. I'll also talk a bit about the software that I used, and how easy it is to use, and what level of technical ability you might need to produce audio works. Thanks so much for listening, and here are a few sounds to play us out.
But what I can't understand is, I know when I were a little young, they used to dredge that river.
In my opinion, in my thinking is, fish are more important than my house.
Mm.
If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Fish are more important than my house. Mm. If you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all for being with us today. And before you go, a few quick reminders about how you can stay connected with the podcast.
You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DisastersDecon.
The podcast is available on all the major platforms. Please download, share, and most importantly, subscribe.
And if you haven't already done this, we really appreciate your ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. This will help us to continue making content for you.
You've been listening to Disasters Deconstructed. And don't forget, disasters are not natural. See you next time.